instead of dumping it, you get eventually up to the situation with the space station. Not the shuttle, but the space station. And, you know, we could take a lot of the water from the space shuttle, put it into the space station, and do the same thing from what we're doing in the shuttle. Electrolysis. And then you're going to have plenty of oxygen. You know, hydrogen, dump the hydrogen overboard. We drop it. And you know, for the space station, it was just a matter of bringing up nitrogen. It would bring up nitrogen. And that's kind of like recycled anyway. You know, it's an inert gas. So they make up for it, but, you know, they have not nitrogen tanks. They kind of don't need much of that. And the oxygen is being created from all the moisture. You have moisture floating in the air. Naturally, they bring up a lot of bags and bags of water every time there's a mission that come up. But I think it's something like 80 or 90% of the water is utilized because, you know, even the sweat, whatever it is coming off your body, it's all being soaked up, and then they separated to get oxygen and again hydrogen. But eventually that's going to be that gets dissipated, and get rid of that, and we drop it. And then in this tranquility machine, tranquility node, they have the saboteur machine, and that gets a little bit more involved with chemistry. I used to know how it worked. Now I have to review that. And, you know, it's almost a closed system up there, but not quite there. That's why they need refills of things from Earth on a regular basis. Back to you.
In the case of the Apollo and probably Gemini missions, electrical power was coming from a fuel cell. You're pouring oxygen and oxygen, let's see what else. Oxygen and hydrogen, I guess you're pouring into it. And it gives you electrical power and water as a byproduct. To my knowledge, all of the electrical power on the International Space Station is coming from your solar panels. So you don't have a need for fuel cells. In the case of Mir, I guess the majority of the electrical power was coming from the solar panels, even though they were being shaded. That's kind of amazing that they didn't know ahead of time, before launch, that they would have this fuel cell shading problem. Or maybe they did and decided just to live with it. So electrical power could come from fuel cells, but you don't need them on the International Space Station. And I think you're saying there is a way of separating the carbon dioxide from the air without using filter assemblies. There's some kind of a chemistry machine that does that. And still I'm a little bit amazed that somewhere there's got to be an automatic system that's automatically replacing any lack of pressure and continuously monitoring the mixture of the gases. Is there the right percentage of oxygen to nitrogen, so to speak? Back to you for any further information on that, Paul. WS2N, K2LIW.
Yeah, and they duplicate everything except the, you know, we don't, you know, on Earth we have argon, which is 1% or something of the different gases. They don't have that on the space station, so it's just oxygen and nitrogen that they're breathing. So, for the fuel cells, you had to mention the hydrogen with oxygen. You know, you had those tanks on the all the missions to the moon in the command module. Well, actually, you know, in the service module of the command module, and in the back. I might remember one of the oxygen tanks did explode, and they had two oxygen tanks in the back. Further missions after that, Apollo 14, 15, 16, 17, well, had three three oxygen tanks. They added an extra one. I guess they figured, you know, one blew, that's bad. In this case, it was one blew and it damaged the second one. That was real bad. And then they have to actually shut off the electrical power because of the use of that oxygen. They didn't want to use any more oxygen for electrical power. So now they had to go on a electrical power, you know, search. Where are we going to get all this amperage from? On Apollo 13 to save those guys. So the saboteur machine here, that separates the carbon dioxide in the air.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Thrust the hard material inside the machine and drop it. That eventually has to be, you know, banged off and cleaned off and they get rid of it. But the oxygen is regained from that. So that's the job of the saboteur machine. So that's some kind of a full cycle they got going. They want to up that size, you know, eventually if they go to Mars, they're going to need it on the planet. They're going to need it for a couple of, you know, for a year, well, not even a year, but probably 6 months transit all the way to Mars, all the way back. A lot of work is going into that. They've got pretty far. I think I have a 96% reusability right now, which is bad. K2RIWWS2M.
A human being breathes out carbon dioxide. That's the result of our metabolism. The carbon is coming from the food that you ate, I'm guessing. So if you're trying to recycle everything, as it is right now, the saboteur machine, the carbon gets deposited in there and it has to be cleaned out. Looks like there's no good way of recycling that carbon that came from the food that the person metabolized before he breathed out that carbon dioxide. So a portion of that is not being recycled. I don't know how you could recycle the carbon. I guess the carbon could be used, in theory, as some kind of a fertilizer if you were growing plants on board. So, periodically, that saboteur machine, they're going to take it apart to remove the carbon from the inside, chip it away by some means, and then discard it. And there probably is two different sides to the machine. They use side A while they're cleaning side B. Is that approximately true, Paul? And that saboteur machine, that's a fairly recent innovation. Is that true? That wasn't there at the beginning of the International Space Station. WS2N, K2RIW.
Message 1YDY.
Another station, yeah, definitely not in the beginning, but probably 2009 or something like that. They bought it up, and they're going to eventually mix the carbon with, I think, the hydrogen, which is being dumped overboard, and that's going to become methane. So that's the final step they had. They're not doing that yet. Another station was in there, Dick.
Yeah, N1YDY, go ahead.
I just wanted to correct a slight misconception. The carbon dioxide isn't from our food directly. It's a byproduct of the Krebs cycle in the mitochondria of each of our cells. And we have a substance called ATP, which is ADP, which is adenosine diphosphate, and that's converted to ATP with the addition of oxygen and liberation of carbon dioxide, and ATP is adenosine triphosphate, and then what actually allows a muscle cell or any other cell to do anything when the ATP is used in respiration and converts back to a free phosphate, which gives you the contraction of the muscle, plus the ADP, which is returned to the mitochondria for respiration. And 1YDY.
Okay, Hank, you've made it a little bit clear that there's a multiple complicated steps, multiple steps going on within the human being. But where was the raw source of the carbon to begin with that eventually becomes carbon dioxide? Where did the carbon originally come from? Back to you, Hank, K2RIW.
Originally, it came from a star. from a nova or supernova. The issue becomes, you've got the carbon in you, but the carbon is used and recycled regularly within you in the process of respiration. That's all I was trying to say. Not something that you can reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that's in the system by changing what you eat and one whitey white.
Yeah, you're going too many steps back when you said, where did the carbon come from the star? The human being is breathing out carbon dioxide. Carbon is leaving his body. How did the carbon get into his body? In what form? And because he's continuously breathing out carbon dioxide, what's replacing the carbon within the human being? Over to you, Hank, K2LAW.
It's got to be food, right, Hank?
I understand what you're saying, but it's almost in any food. And it's really, if you have a, let's say you've got a small garden, a couple of blades of grass, and then right next to that you've got some mammal, call him a mouse. The mouse exhales the carbon dioxide. The grass absorbs that and uses it in photosynthesis, in its creation and use of energy and respiration. So it's just part of the larger system that is normally at use during the normal respiration. Does it come from the food itself? I doubt it. I think it comes from what you breathe in and is recombined later in the system. But I could be wrong. It's been many years since I've had high school biology.
Yeah, that oak tree in my backyard, that is many tons of what you and I would call wood, which is a kind of a hydrocarbon. And where did that carbon come from? It came from the air that the leaves of the tree breathe. The majority of the mass of that tree didn't come from the minerals being sucked up by the roots. It came from the carbon being absorbed from the air. Okay? We don't have those plants on board that are using the carbon dioxide in that manner. So in the case of the space station, human beings are breathing out carbon and oxygen. Carbon dioxide. Human beings are giving up carbon. So I am guessing the very beginning of this very complicated multiple cycles, the carbon came from the food that the human being consumed. Hydrocarbons. Yeah, I think some of the food that we eat, I think it could be called a hydrocarbon. So the original source of the carbon the human being is exhaling, I think is coming from the food. I don't think it's coming from his oxygen, from his lungs, ingesting carbon from the air. I could be wrong on that one. Back to you, Hank. KQLAW.
Well, I don't think you're wrong, Dick. I think that, when we eat things that are called carbohydrates. And just from the etymology of the words, I'm pretty sure that that's a place where we get some of the carbon.
Okay. Now, if this is the best of all worlds, it would be sure nice during a Mars mission, for instance, when you've got a tremendous amount of time required to continuously be giving the human being consumables. That human being is consuming oxygen, water, food. He's consuming an amount of mass and volume per year that's approximately the mass of your house and approximately the volume of your house. If this is the best of all worlds, you would invent a system for that Mars mission that takes every single molecule of gas, solid, and fluid that comes out of a human being and recycle all of it. And if I'm recycling everything, I'm going to have to recycle the carbon dioxide, okay? To separate the oxygen from the carbon dioxide so the person can rebreathe it, I can see that. But how do you recycle that carbon that came out of the human being as carbon dioxide? You see where I'm going on that one, Hank, and maybe you've got a suggestion. NYYDY, K2LAW.
I see where you're going. I don't really have a suggestion for it. I just was trying to suggest, though, that during the course of a trip from Earth to Mars, that it would be unlikely that you could weed out all the carbohydrates that a human being consumes. soon on his way. That's all. I wasn't trying to determine anything else. I was just suggesting that the whole thing ends up being relatively complex in the way it's assembled.
Yeah, that metabolism of a normal human being is around 2,400 kilocalories per day. That's a continuous heat generation of 130 watts. 130 joules per second are being given off in the form of heat due to the metabolism of that human being. So you could say that the human being is consuming at least 130 watts of energy by way of the food and oxygen he's consuming. And now if you're going to take all of the molecules coming out of the human being and recycle them, if you could do it with 100% efficiency, it's going to be more than 130 watts to run that machinery to do that recycling. The energy the machine, the human being has taken out of the food and air and water he has consumed, you want to recycle all of that so that he can consume it again. In theory, all those molecules will continuously flow between the human being and the recycling machinery, because to have enough tanks to replace, to just have stored tanks of oxygen that you pour into the human being, you're going to very rapidly run out of it. You got to do recycling. You can't carry, in the 3 years that the human being is going to be on that trip, you can't carry three houses of volume and mass per human being. You just can't carry that much on that mission. So complete recycling, or damn close to complete recycling, is going to have to be required. And to recycle that carbon dioxide, that strikes me as a relatively difficult process. If you were growing plants, the plants do the kind of recycling. On Earth, let me drop. The plants on Earth do an awful lot of that recycling for us. But unless you're going to have a greenhouse on that spaceship, you've got to find some other way of doing that recycling. N1YDY for any comments, K2LIW. And thank you for your information, by the way.
I don't have anything more to contribute, but as always, thanks for the entire evening. I enjoy it listening to you guys during the course of the week, or I'm sorry, this weekend day. But I think I'm going to jump out of here because I think I'm at the end of the string of what I might know. N1YDY.
Hey, Hank, a smart person knows what he doesn't know. So, of all the articles you've read, Paul, how deep have they gone into total recycling? A Mars mission, I'm convinced, requires, let me call it, 99% total recycling. Has NASA had very much specific articles on that subject? As we evolve the machinery for the International Space Station, and it gets better and better, I hear the sound of more and more recycling taking place. But we still got a long way to go. If we're throwing hydrogen overboard, we're chipping away the carbon and throwing it away. So there's a significant portion of the recycling that isn't there yet. WS2N, K2IW, Grant Paul.
Yeah, well, they're always striving to do that. And they found out the equipment that they're using could be improved. They found out there's molecules in the air that are affecting the equipment, making the equipment break down sooner than they thought. So now they're working around all these problems. And, you know, these molecules in the air that are breaking things on the space station, if you were on Earth, they would float away. I forget what they call them. But they would float away, but they're on everything. They're on, even on scotch tape, and these things get, they float around the cabin of the space station, and they start attacking gaskets and problems. And you know, they're working around it. So they're learning all the time, but the goal is to get to as close to 100% efficiency as possible. But to have a complete biosphere is not going to be an easy thing. It almost reminds me of perpetual motion. I know it's not, but, you know, it's like having a closed system, and everybody inside has to keep on living and being happy. Well, like the EM drive, you know, Everything bouncing around inside the EM drive. Nothing's coming out, but yet you're moving. Yeah. Yeah, I saw a good write up on that, too. You put them in a big circle and have them spin, and you could have perpetual motion if the EM drive worked. So, I don't know. Like I said, I think they're up to 96 or 98% or something. They're getting up there, but they need to. They need to get that carbon out and combine that with the hydrogen that they're dumping overboard in the electrolysis process. They're wasting all that hydrogen now. And you could put those two together and wind up with methane. And now with methane, you could have a fuel or, it's definitely a usable gas. I think with enough of that, you could chill it down and get liquid methane. You could use that as a fuel to eventually leave Mars. And then with all the air that's on Mars, even though it's very thin, you'd be able to utilize the carbon dioxide that's in. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. You separate that, and you get oxygen, and then you take the carbon from that air, and then mix that with hydrogen that you bring along with you. What did you manufacture? As you go flying through space, create a methane out of that. They got all these plans. But, I haven't read a conclusive plan yet that's going to create this 100% biosphere that you really need. Not yet. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, the hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon that's coming out of that machine, it'd be nice if you could somehow convert it back into a hydrocarbon, a food. A plant does that for you. By way of photosynthesis, the plant generates hydrocarbons. The right kind of plant grows food for you. And can you make a machine do that? Or do we have to have a greenhouse on board? And there's all kinds of difficulties of having enough sunshine getting into pressurized panels that hold in the air pressure for the plants and yet allow sunlight to be exposed. I mean, this is part of what was going on as a real difficulty in the place, in the movie called The Martian. How in the world did he hold back all of that air pressure? The plants don't grow without air pressure. You could grow them on a lower air pressure if you want to, but they're going to grow more slowly. So if you got full air pressure, 14.7 pounds per square inch, let me drop it. And you got a great big area of all the glass on a greenhouse to let the sunlight shine through, that's a real huge difficulty. 14.7 pounds per square inch on that glass is tons on a reasonable size of glass. To make the glass and the supporting structure strong enough to support that air pressure and yet let the sunlight through, that's a tough problem. I mean, he found some little eyes coming out of potatoes. He used those as seeds, and he grew a whole bunch of potatoes in this Martian soil. And using the packets of human waste as fertilizer makes good science fiction, but there's a lot of details in there that wouldn't really work in reality. Just maintaining that air pressure and yet letting in enough sunlight, that can't be done. And there was a portion of that movie where he had this simple membrane going over the opening of his habitat, and you're led to believe that opening where the windstorm is being blown in, not a chance. 14.7 pounds per square inch on the inside of that, pushing outward, and the air pressure on Mars is very close to zero. I don't care how fast the wind blew on Mars, it's not going to come close to moving that membrane. Do you remember that portion of the movie, Paul? I looked at that and I said, no way. How was you, Paul? KTRIW?
Yeah, but I don't know. That was supposed to be part of his airlock. There was supposed to be another door on the inside. I assume the inside door was holding, and then That was just, a low pressure area or something at the time. I don't know what they were thinking, but yeah, I know I saw that. Duct tape back was holding back, I guess, thousands of pounds of pressure. That's okay. You know, along with the windstorm too, that picked up the antenna, flew through the air, and stuck, went through the guy's suit. That antenna would have never moved. You could go out on a 200 mile an hour wind and stand on that planet and never blow over, because it's I don't know, 1/10 or 1/7 or something percent of the pressure that we have here. It's like 1 or 2 bars or something of pressure. We had down 900 bars. Some ridiculously low pressure. So even if you have a 200 mile an hour wind, you're not going to blow over. You're sure not going to break loose a big parabolic dish antenna. Oh, and the greenhouse, yeah, you don't have to worry about the sun. I mean, they have a greenhouse now on the International Space Station. They've been growing lettuce and eating the lettuce. A couple of other things that they've been growing up there. But they're not using sunlight there. Just lights in this little tiny area that they have. You know, you would need like an acre of land, you know. This looks like about maybe a 4x4 area of a growing area, for all their plants. WS plants.
Repeater, time out.
Yeah, let me show you how difficult that greenhouse is to make a pole. 14.7 pounds per square inch. A square foot is 144 square inches. Over 2,000 pounds per square foot is normal air pressure. If I'm going to have a tiny greenhouse of 150 square feet of glass, that's 317,000 pounds of air pressure. A third of 1,000,000 pounds of air pressure is 150 square foot of greenhouse glass at full air pressure. That's a difficult problem. Yeah, I can see how, as long as you've got enough solar cells giving you enough electrical power, you can run light-emitting diodes to make artificial sunlight. I think that's the only way to do it. To do it with greenhouse glass, maintain the pressure of the glass, and let the sunshine shine in, that's out of the question. You're way ahead of the game to use that sunlight to run solar panels. The solar panels give you electrical power. The electrical power runs solar simulating light-emitting diodes. This was TechNet number 1637. That was Space Report number 237. We're at the end of our time. 73, you all. And I presume they did do it with solar simulating light-emitting diodes on the space station. Is that true, Paul? WS2N for final, K2RIW. Bye-bye for now. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, real good. And yeah, they look like they're pinkish reddish. You can always look that up on the NASA site. Growing food on the International Space Station. You know, the veggie program or something they call it. And I remember Scott Kelly up there eating the food. The original stuff that they grew a couple of years back, they sent back on a SpaceX spacecraft, make sure everything was good and okay on Earth. And then they got the okay, the next batch of the stuff. They were all sharing it, giving it to the Russians too, you know. And but I mean, the amount of stuff you're gonna grow is, you know, in that 3x3 or 4x4 area, is it enough for one person for one meal? But I think they all shared a couple of leaves of romaine lettuce or whatever. I forgot what it was. 73 Dick, everybody else have a good night. We'll catch you next week. This is WS2N.
With good farming practices on planet Earth, I think on an acre of property, you can grow enough food for a human being to survive for a year. I think you can do that, rough numbers. That's 40,000 square feet of area in that acre, sucking up sunlight, doing all that photosynthesis. As it is right now, to convert the raw materials into food, we have to use plants and photosynthesis. Although some of the steps of photosynthesis have been done in the laboratory, I don't think anybody has invented a machine that can really do the whole cycle artificially as opposed to doing it with plants, the photosynthesis process. Does that sound right to you, Paul? WS2N for a final, K2RIW.
Yeah, it sounds right. We'll see what happens. I've seen a couple of shows. That Mars show by the National Geographic, they had quite a big area dedicated to growing stuff. The guy was saying that, soon we're going to have acres and acres of the stuff growing. Well, what are you going to do? And, one thing I realized tonight, how little I know about the biology, when Hank was talking, I said, wow, I got a long way to go. That was good information. I said, wow. Uh, 73, Dick, everybody else will. WS to end clear.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
MIT, this thing is Crestdale. Hey, this is K2MIT, this thing is New Rochelle.
Tonight at 8:30, W2VL repeater system.
But you did call, that's why I'm calling you back on the radio. What's up, Rich?
Hey, Barry. I found two brand new power pole connectors. One red, one black. I don't have, as you know, I don't have a tool. I have my soldering gun and my iron. I can't find my solder. And I think when you and Hal did the job on the amplifier. He took it by mistake. It was a large hole.
Well, you don't know that. It could be under on a table somewhere, you know.
Okay.
So what you're saying is you want me to stop by with soldering iron and solder, which of course I have. And I'll leave you with some solder too. I have a giant roll of it. A really giant roll of it. I've been using it for the last 20 years, and I still haven't used it up. That's how big it is. And anything else?
And you have the power pole tool.
Oh, yeah. I'll put it in the car today. I definitely have it. I'll stick it in the car. Okay. I don't know if I'm coming out today. I think I'm going to be a little busy today. I got cop hopping in a little while and some other stuff, you know.
All right, if you can make it, it would be great. I think it did get lost without. It was not on purpose. Just a mistake. Because I kept it with the gun and the iron and the toolbox. Not gone, not there.
Okay. I gotta get back to driving, so I'll talk to you in a little while. I'm going to throw all that stuff in the car when I come out to see you. You'll have it. No big deal.
All right, Barry. All I ask is let me know when you're coming out. Well, if you're not coming out, don't let me hang it.
Okay, well, for the moment, I'm not coming out. I'll tell you when I am coming out, okay, Richie?
Keep in touch. M2M Big M2E.
Rich, I'll see you in a little bit. N2EO and 2MB. Mobile.
Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
It almost sounds like ignition noise.
Try noise on my signal? All right. Maybe I'll have to work on a filter cap from the power supply.
Yeah, it's not alternator wine.
Okay, if it's not alternator wine, what would you describe it as?
Almost ignition noise. It's a, it's a pulsing noise. It'd be the best one I could give you. You'd probably have to listen to yourself to appreciate it.
QRZ. QSL, sorry. Yeah, the power supply here is a Radio Shack 19 amp that the local Radio Shack was selling before closing. So maybe it's not such a wonderful deal after all.
Do you have a high and low power switch on the radio?
It's not a switch per se, but it's software defined. Yes, it's down, turned to low.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. I was going to suggest you lower the power to see what happens when the current rate goes down. If it's a switching supply, it may be switching noise that you're picking up through DC cable. I don't know. Maybe the radio or the power cable is just sitting in the wrong position.
Alright, well, I'll have to play with that later.
I'm not in a position now to start fooling with that. I appreciate you letting me know what's going on now that I know there's a problem. I'll work on it.
Yeah, it's taking up a considerable amount of your audio. Not because it's necessarily that loud.
It sounds like your mic audio is a little low also. Certainly not objectionable. And certainly usable, and if the pulsing wasn't there, it'd be a lot easier to hear.
Okay, very good. I just turned the mic and holding it a different way. Is this helping any way at all?
I was hearing some kind of other sound. It was almost like you were brushing the mic up against some cloth, but otherwise it didn't change the pulsing noise, though.
Okay, given that, I'm pretty sure it's from the power supply. All right, I'll have to work on that. Thanks very much for letting me know. I guess I won't keep you then. Nothing worse than having a partial conversation. So, nice talking with you. Here is N1. YDY clear on your final.
This is Eddie Kimobi with a comment.
Well, go right ahead, Jerry. Maybe you've got a little bit more insight into what it sounds like.
Let me make this an explosive thing, but I didn't get to call the name of the other station. Are you using a Cat5 extension cable, maybe on the microphone with a remote head radio?
No, I'm not. I've got a Kenwood TM281A, and it's just got the power lead running from the power supply to it, and then another lead running out to the antenna. That's it. I don't have any separation kits going on or anything like that.
And I chose my idea because I know in some microphones when you don't use the shielded cable that comes with the radio, use a Cat5, you get a motorboating sound. Okay, I'm at my destination. I thought I'd just make that comment. 73's, I'll be clear. WB2ZRC, do you get it? WB2ZX, Mobile will be clear.
You're getting to work earlier and earlier, Jerry.
That's why.
I'm sorry?
Well, kids aren't in New York City. Maybe that's why.
One never knows. Anyway, I'm sort of down the block from where I'm supposed to be. Got probably another 5 minutes to go. And when was it? Oh. Now I forgot the prefix you called. WB2ZSA. And I'm sorry, I didn't get your name either.
Okay, the call was N1. YDY, and my name was Hank.
Okay, Hank. That's the problem with getting all these thoughts of getting things. I thought that's what it was, but I wasn't sure. Anyway, pardon me. I'm going to let you investigate that. My traffic light just changed, so I can get going now, and hopefully I will be arriving at my customers sooner than later.
Okay, have a good morning. Thanks for the report, and I'll catch you guys down the log, as they say. N1YDY is clear.
Okay, N1YDY, WB2ZSC. Have a nice morning.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Tonight at 8:30, W2VL Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Says Anto Zed, you seem all be listening.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.